interrupting a neo-euchronial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTW-RLM-602. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you get behind the woodshed. And it's pretty much that simple. Pretty straightforward. And guess what? We may have to change that intro a bit, maybe, if Ukraine goes away, huh? Can we have a little bit of hallelujah for that? And maybe even the threat of the nuclear glowing postulation. We'll see. Interesting set of circumstances happened in this last week to bring things along. And let's just hope it keeps, the momentum keeps moving. And we see somebody who will move this thing through a lot better than it has been. Give everybody the memory of what it was supposed to be. We can continue from there, I suppose. Again, these folks, these criminals in office don't go away at all. And continuing a little bit about that on the, from the last episode as well, another aspect of more revelations coming out of the interactions of nations and their institutions, and in particular, the very, very important fiscal or monetary, actually the monetary system of the world, the global system, about from the former IMF executive director for Russia, Alesky Mosin. The IMF has blacklisted of countries subjected to discrimination. Understand, I guess I put all these things forward, and I hope you think about them in the context, and maybe even outside the context that I'll speak about them here. There's a lot wrapping around all these things. What's going on behind the scenes? We hear international people talking, complaining of certain things that are happening in meetings. We can now get a little glimpse from someone who's going to retire because he's just had it as well, 32 years of experience. And he's coming out to call out what's going on the west side of the IMF, the global financial system. And I understand, my understanding would be this is partly the promotion of Russia, but also the expose coming from an insider into that system, whom I didn't know anything about, who now comes out to say that the International Monetary Fund has a blacklist of member countries that are discriminated against on the basis of geopolitical preferences. He said that shortly before resigning. Quote, there is a blacklist of foundation members who are openly discriminated against based on a geopolitical preference. There are many countries on this list, and this is constantly growing, Mosin said in an interview. The countries such as Iran, Venezuela, Zimbabwe, Syria, Afghanistan, and Myanmar are on the blacklist, Mosin said, adding that the recent African countries such as Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, which have broken away from Western influence and asserted their independence and sovereignty, have also been blacklisted with along with Georgia as a punishment for disobedience. So this international civil rights is punishment for their disobedience. As we see, you can read what punishment is a civil right in the United States. It's global and imposed globally. You can read that at 42 U.S.C. 1981 for yourself. Quote, there was a major earthquake in Syria that caused severe destruction. This was a situation where the fund was obligated to provide assistance. However, the IMF did not offer any help, which was due to the stance of the board of directors, where most of the votes are held by Western countries, he explained. So board of directors, a corporation, two, continuing this method of destruction. And we wondered, and this is backing up an observation that anybody could have made, why was the IMF not supplying help? Well, because of this. We now see, and I didn't understand that he came out to say that at the time. I must have missed that. So he seemed to be quiet about it. But Syria did not get the help that it needed in that disastrous earthquake. And this is why. And so this is, again, not going to bode well for all those countries that are now moving to the BRICS and want to be in the BRICS, which, again, are lesser economies that need to be brought in and up and into parity with the performing economies. And we understand, well, how are we going to do that? Well, just watch. They destroy the bigger economies, and they bring them down. They bring them into parity, something that they all can fit in that basket eventually so that the global financial system can handle and deal with it. It's all on paper anyway. And so there's an obligation, and we all wondered and felt that it ought to be met, and it wasn't. And so much for obligation, so much for the things that we think that good and peace and things were to do. It's not about that. These are the tools of war, and these are the, as we could hear from the economic hitman in the book. Whether or not all of it was right or wrong, I don't know. There's a nice heads up about it, though. And if you think the U.S. government doesn't wage this war, economic war, on others and not Americans, you need to look around in America, too. This is a tool of the, I don't even call it, you can't call them elites. These are just psychopaths. I don't even know, these are criminals that have gained the edge. And up until now, at least still now, and will be for a while, they're going to have roughshod, run roughshod, and we might find some very interesting things in the next few months in upscaling what's going on. This blacklist is the war of deprivation for those not complying. Remember, comply or die, said this a long time ago. We're now getting from an insider these very facts are going on. There's no need for a blacklist of those that are defeated by the war, so those won't be on that list, or do not know that they are in a war being defeated, like Americans don't seem to know either. Well, except to moan and groan about it, as we do and tend to. From the article, the fund has become a financial appendage of NATO, an agent and instrument of Western foreign policy, Mosen emphasized. So now it makes perfect sense why NATO is expanding globally, not constrained by its original ostensible purpose to defend Europe, now from a non-existent Soviet Union, though it isn't that the IMF is an appendant of NATO, I don't think, even though this was an insider who should know better than the guy behind Woodshed, but I don't think it was really an appendage of NATO, but the other way around, as if NATO disappears and the IMF is goodly and wholesome again, is not what you'll find. So NATO, NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is the last of three phases of the process, being the military intervention threat if the jackals failed to persuade a nation. Not only is the IMF not an appendage, but the NATO relationship seems to be a bit different, as the confessions of an economic hitman might explain, exposing the dark side. I would say the only side of an international economic development in the form of an economic hitman who manipulate countries into accepting large loans for infrastructure projects they don't need, thus indebting them to the international organizations and corporations, whom the author, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, John Perkins himself, sounds a lot like a change agent to the sustainable Soviet. And to jump from allowing us to look at this and jump from the frying pan of the controversial and revelatory confessions into the fire of the future that they want, right where he wrote, "We will commit ourselves to navigating a course toward compassion, democracy, and social justice for all. As he says, we need to embrace a form of capitalism that is based on principles of sustainability and social responsibility." And so again, we may have these truths that are coming out, but in that is a promotion for something else that they're bringing along. Completely consistent with what I'm seeing. If I took Occam's advantage and looked to reduce the problem, it's a direct line right to that, the international, the global financial system. More threats by the author in that book, John Perkins, appear to be an appeal to we the people to comply sustainably before the economic hitman has to come get tough with us as well. Despite that, he also confirms our potential for escape, that Achilles heel of the oppressor, those that know you better than yourselves, as I talk about, and which I hope those of you who are reading the Protocols of the Elders of Zion have found for yourselves. He reminds us, fear and debt drives this system. We are hammered with messages that terrify us into believing that we must pay any price, assume any debt to stop the enemies who, we are told, lurk at our doorsteps, or under our beds, or in our closets. Does that sound familiar, folks? He said that there. This is a book written back a ways. And why we are admonished to never fear and avoid debt or usury like a plague or worse. Never forget, the real power is always with the people, he admits. This is the Achilles heel. It's in you. Each one of you has this power. Again, I hope you read the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, and maybe you won't go through the destructive phase of realizing there was people that knew me better than myself, but then, if you will, the exaltation of realizing that they have weaknesses too. You may not know everything, and they may know a lot about you, but you can cover up, you can shield yourself from a lot of those if you look and see what they can do, what they know to do, and look for their Achilles heels, as I do. It's what the broadcast is about. exposing how that works in real functioning ways. So never forget, the real power is always within the people. Once they wake up, the dream, the nightmare, is over. This takes an active participation, though. That's why I say, get you behind the woodshed. Put the miscreant behind the woodshed, not you be brought there all the time. Where in this sense, as he's been speaking, again, this is an interesting book. If you read through and understand the sustainability, the promotion in the world toward all these economic things, what they're doing, what they're setting up for, look between the lines, the admissions that are made, not like they're dishonest here. They're just not maybe telling you what it can really attach to. So in this sense, that the people means each of you when you look at what they're saying as well, even though they're talking on an international sense. In part, the divine inspiration or providence aside, because the greatest resources we have are our minds and imaginations, he admits. And if we learn to use them, we can solve the seemingly intractable problems that confront us. So our mind has the ability, the intelligence, to work through this as well. Don't sit in fear. Certainly don't get in debt. It's leading to fear. It leads to these things that are unknowable except that debt, and you don't want to focus on it. So he's admitting in this book certain interesting things that we can come together. And then we have providence on our side as well, which is even a bigger deal. But relative to these minds and doing things, or as I say, get you behind the woodshed now, is part of that point. You cannot sit back and just think about it. We can have an imagination. It has to work. Get into a resource is a eventual product that you come up and turn out. Not the commercial type, just what you produce from you. So get you behind the woodshed now, if and you haven't heard that stated before. It's right here in the news to remind us, and the literature that's out there to keep us going. Another interesting ongoing thing, and counter to what Trump did, because this came on with Trump's imposition. Why, I tell you, you have to look very carefully at these different factions in the government. The uniparty, it ends up being a uniparty for whatever reason. They don't really serve a duty under our Constitution, yet they ought to. And yet, because there is that Constitution, they profess that they follow it, then that gives everybody an opportunity, at least a chance, to challenge these bad decisions. But a federal judge vacates a bump stock rule, recognizes right to possess. This is after the Supreme Court decision about this case that the judge then had to act, and he now has. Senior United States Judge David Allen Ezra vacated the ATF's bump stock ban rule on Monday and recognized the plaintiff's Michael Cargill's right to possess the device under federal law. Careful here, says federal law. The case is Cargill versus Garland in the United States District for Western District of Texas. Cargill secured a favorable ruling against the bump stock bans in the same district court in 2023. However, the court did not provide any means of relief for Cargill. Interjection. That would say that case should have been dismissed for no relief to be able to be given. But it wasn't. And interestingly so. It continues, the New Civil Liberties Alliance noted that once the Supreme Court of the United States ruled against the bump stock ban, the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit vacated the district court's denial of Cargill's motion for relief, instructing the district court to consider alterations to the judgment or other relief. On November 4th, Judge Ezra decided, quote, that the plaintiff Michael Cargill has the right to possess and transfer non-mechanical bump stocks under federal law, and that the federal statutory prohibitions against the possession and transfer of machine guns do not limit Mr. Cargill's rights or legal relations in this regard. But the importance of this case is not about these bump stocks. That's just a clear reading of what the limitation is, and that's what the point about it is. This is about agency overreach, executive agencies doing something reserved to the legislature. The agencies are not to make law, and an agency cannot make law under color of a regulation. And I don't know, folks have been listening to me any time, how long have you been hearing me say that, notwithstanding these Supreme Court cases that didn't exist until this year? So this is just coming back, and something that any one of you who takes the time to read these statutes, yes, as eye-bleedingly dry, crack eyeballs it can be, and tiring and sleepiness that comes on when you're just reading this stuff, it's so droning on and on, which they want to do that so that you go away. But if you break through that, you see this all the same way. you're going to have a whole different understanding of how this is going on and what's going on, and you too can peer right through the problem. And I think we get more people that can do that. We go much quicker through to the better future that we want, not the one they keep imposing. So this bump stock, so-called, this thing that a lot of people wouldn't even use them. They're kind of interesting, but anyway, they're not a machine gun. And so the rule doesn't apply that applies to machine guns. The rule that implements the law doesn't apply to machine guns. The bump stock is not a machine part and not a moving part with that. And so this whole issue is not really about this at all. It's a separation of powers matter, such as was decided this year in the Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo and Relentless Incorporated versus the Department of Commerce case I read about, striking down the Chevron deference. The Chevron deference is the same style type of case. This is a limited form of government, whether we've received it, enjoyed it for 60, 70 years or not, or maybe longer, maybe 100 years by now. But it's there. It just takes, I don't know, again, this is not justice in the system, an equity system at all, and that's all the courts operate seemingly on anymore, because in the federal system, there is no common law. Erie versus Tompkins, go read it. There is no federal common law for all these common law advocates. That's all in the state law. However, it's equity, and certainly since the administrative side, where property has to be protected. And so they had to strike down that, and the agencies are now being more limited to what they were supposed to do. Here that the Alcohol, Tabasco, and Firearms ATF agency here as well exceeded its lawful authority under the law it was to make a regulation to implement. But why does, as I think about that Tabasco, why does the government feel it has to regulate Tabasco anyway? It must be hotter than a cherry on a cigarette. Anyway, and further here, the enforcement of those rules is constitutionally valid. So they make the regulate the rule, the agency does, to implement the constitutional law, if it is, you can challenge that, or the regulation, and that it's implemented validly. But this has been another argument we've placed before courts, which have up until now denied all of this to us. It's not an invalid enforcement of the rule. And that was when the court started to go out. They said, well, if you have a valid rule, they can enforce it about any way they want, which is another problem. But here we have it. Now it's being cleared up. This case, again, is not, those of you think this is a gun right to the Second Amendment, yeah, that was involved. And we got confirmation that you have a right to possess. It includes the right of acquisition. But this is about the limited form of government and how that's maintained. Cargill has the right to possess and transfer non-mechanical bump stocks under federal law, and that the federal statutory prohibitions against the possession and transfer of machine guns do not limit Mr. Cargill's right or legal relations in this regard. Very important two points to keep track of. So again, these cases come forward. I talk about them. I want us to understand better. I don't hear people talking about this. I don't see people or watch people talk in this context either. And I think that's a big failure for us. It's not harder, much harder to speak this way and actually incorporate the limitations within what we use and speak it. We want to talk about it being political. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it's the things that protect your life. And that's not political. I guess you can make anything political if it has to do with the government in position. But again, a limited foreign government, it's looking at the government. It's not, and the functions of it. It's not looking at us. And it shouldn't touch us either. And if you look carefully, that is the truth. It's there. It's just not implemented that way. We see the glimpse of that here. It needs to be implemented properly as well. And here's back to the comment, to the power of the commenting locally to a receptive body. I talk about finding people that are willing to listen in these seats of decision, wherever they are, the county commissioners and all. Not so easy sometimes. And then they have their fear tactic that's thrown on them. They get to go to these meetings to become a commissioner's school. And they're told by someone who's doing consensus and collaboration what the rules are, and they're destroyed, essentially undermined right there as an independent thinking commissioner or leading decision maker, unless they have someone like myself and my colleagues that will talk to them and explain what they were just told and how it was a deception and where to go look to find what their power really is in order to keep a balance on that, and they don't get lost in what they feel are told is something that they could be liable to. It's all a lie, but the power of commenting locally and the power to see, have a receptive body is important to maintain for people, because we can start to see when those bodies are receptive here to factual analysis, notwithstanding the parasites inside the system saying, no, 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 this is not the standard. This is all wrong. Notwithstanding that pressure, the South West Idaho Health District Board pulls the COVID vaccines from its clinic. So listen carefully on the limitation for that. However, residents of the Southwest Idaho Health District will no longer be able to get vaccinated against COVID-19 at district health offices. The district's Board of Health voted 4-3 Tuesday to remove the COVID-19 vaccine from its facilities after receiving around 300 public comments urging them to do so. So here's your democracy in action relative to representation. If people would just understand how this really works and what it takes and that it can take this, then to do it. You can't sit, moping about these things and groaning about them. You have to figure out a way to start to change things and be active in doing that. Hopefully you find a bunch of mutually agreeing people, like these 300 people or so, or some maybe less. There may be some that were countering this, but here it is, the evidence that it can work. Of the few that happened up until now, the board initially heard a presentation from the district staff physician, Dr. Perry Jansen, who recommended keeping the vaccine available through the health district offices. Quote, "We really serve as a safety net provider for people who can't get health care in any other way, largely because of finances," Jansen told the board. "We're able to offer free and discounted services for people who don't have access through private care." That was their rationale. The COVID-19 vaccinations are no longer free, but public health departments can purchase them at a discount. I find that interesting as well. However, because bulk purchasing works, huh? Anyway. COVID vaccines are still available at other locations, like commercial pharmacies and healthcare clinics not affiliated with Southwest District Health. My thought on that was, see, they want the poor included, so they're going to give the COVID bioweapons to you. No one be left behind here. The rest of you pay for it. But in none of these reports, as you'll read through, none of these reports that they referred to, did anyone say that no local health official non-fraudulently demonstrated an infectious agent at any principal after a report of suspicion by a doctor of a contagion required by the local communicable disease law that any treatment was warranted, let alone a bioweapon that's determined by federal law at Title 50 to be prohibited. Again, go read for the exceptions. Go read what they understand. I've talked all about this. I'm just going to put that right there, right up front. Nothing was non-fraudulent demonstrated for any treatment. Forget just the vaccines now. I'm showing you how bad this thing has become. Nothing could be shown as a treatment and nothing found. But that's how this thing went. 300 comments did not mention the law first rate, and this is what I'm suggesting to you in the future is going to be the downfall of people not being able to rely on what I'm saying first. Not 5 years later, just to remove what the government imposed that had no right. What, the CDC had no right to impose it. They were supposed to be an advisory body, nothing more. It's also exposed that all the pseudoscience the CDC or anyone else is using was irrelevant and unauthorizable, where they couldn't find a local, they didn't make a local non-fraudulent demonstration. All of it was irrelevant. You see how fast it swept the table clear. But we didn't get a peep of that in the comments. Well, I'm asking those that listen behind the woodshed, do better. Look for the very first demarcation. And normally you have, for government, you have to go to that black and white. That's the rules. Whether you like them or not, whether you think they're powerful, whether you think they're corruptions, that's what the occupier uses. And yet you look close and that's not too bad. I showed you how it wasn't too bad, that communicable disease law. Some of it doesn't make logic sense, but I wasn't arguing the logical sense of it. I'm arguing that there's a duty in the officials that take the employment or the office. But there was not a peep about the law. Now, why is that? And the great Covey swindle is about impressing people with the need for medical passport ID to track and trace as well. There was like running a cover in the front for something else. It was a multifaceted attack. The U.S. And we're seeing this, again, 5 or 6 years later coming on now. UK government announced plans to roll out mandatory digital ID as a matter of urgency. And the sub-lead thought on this is the mandatory digital IDs for all citizens who wish to participate in society. Sound familiar? Now listen carefully on how they sneak it in. They incrementally start it out. They put it down and they let people get accepting of it. Prime Minister Starmer met with Bill Gates recently to discuss the scheme, and the UK government launched the Office of Digital Identities and Attribute, a digital ID watchdog within the Department of for Science, Innovation, and Technocracy. What? No, technology. See, innovation and technology together again, naturally. Tasked with rolling out the mandatory digital IDs under the leadership of a chief executive, Hanna Rudder. With this, the Labor government picked up where the conservative one left off. Well, they got a unit party there, too. Well, considering that the office was first announced by the previous cabinet in 2022, when it was envisioned as an interim entity for introducing digital ID in the UK. Quote, digital identity can make people's lives easier. So convenient, folks. And so cheap, so free, so cost-effective. And unlock billions of pounds of economic growth, Rudder said, without further breaking down the numbers that helped her arrive at the billions of pounds figure. Or who's going to get it, right? Those unlocked billions can't be intended for my listener in the UK or anywhere else there, could they? Not likely. They unlock billions if you're the product, though, don't they? So it's likely, though, to go to these sorts, as we read right in the article, that you'll be able to choose from a range of digital identity and attribute providers based on the private and charities sectors and the accredited organizations that meet the framework's requirements. Yeah, billions for them, not thee. The system OFDIA is in charge of and does not include developing a government-issued ID card, they assure us, and can be used on a voluntary basis, she continued. Yet Rudder here made sure to address one of the criticisms regarding the security of such schemes, centralization, by saying that the system her office is working on does not have a centralized digital database either. That's certain, at least for now. Until when? And what else is such a government digital ID going to be used for but eventually centralizing it for convenience? Which we can hear here. No, not here, here. Right here. Currently, OFDIA is working to create a trusted and secure digital identity market. This work focuses on five areas, starting with developing and maintaining the digital identity and framework, and then being in charge of register and accredited organizations that meet the framework's requirements. So markets to participate in society, and then we'll see it's going globally. Right in the article, the office's jurisdiction at the same time encompasses issuing trademarks. As in two words, trademarks to companies. Currently, there are reportedly 49 meeting one of the three criteria. And then there is an international cooperation, the goal of which is to ensure interoperability, i.e. transnational viability of the schemes. There you go. Your global system. Your digital gulag. Your Siberian gulag. The global panopticon. But it's not going to be a government ID, not yet. And it's all sold to us to be tracked, traced, and now we have another one. Very interesting story, again, out of UK. Tracked and traced by the Grim Reaper wristwatch O'Death. The Death Committee, a punch cloth, it seems to me, for Obama scare and Trump scare. Remember, he put in that, too. He didn't kill any of that. Went to those authorized organizations for your healthcare, and you watch how the modernization of our healthcare system went through the down to the stinking abyss, through the toilet. The time of death calculator in British hospitals. Hundreds of Britons going to hospital could soon be given an approximate date of death. Cradle to grave, folks. They'll give you a date for it. Approximate date of death. All calculated by artificial intelligence. Error prone, folks. Error prone. AI error prone. Using the so-called death calculator, using the results of a single electrocardiogram, the ECG, the test, which takes a few minutes and records the electrical activity of the heart, can reveal hidden health problems that the doctors may not see. The program called AI-ECG, error-prone, risk assessment, or AIRE, I said A-I-R-E, error-prone, I knew it was coming, has been shown in studies to accurately identify the risk of death in the 10 years following an EKG with an accuracy of up to 100%? 80? 90? No, 78%. It is understood that the first trial will recruit several hundred patients, and the research published today in the Journal of Lancet Digital Health, they helped us a lot during COVID, remember, showed that the error-prone, A-I-R-E, can also predict future heart failure in almost 80% of the cases. Is that the 80% of the population that got the jab at Warp Speed? And that's how they know? Doctors believe that in this way they will be informed not only of about diagnosis, but also about the predicting a range of health risks. Remember, it's all risk-based, right? It's all how you're treated. Everything's a risk management. Don't cure, just manage the risk. Manage the anticipation. Health risks, meaning that they can intervene in time, e.g., put someone on a diet or resort to preventative treatment, which would be death, wouldn't it? Euthanasia or something? Something like that? Is that how you prevent treatment? Dr. Arunashi Sao, a cardiologist at one of the hospitals where this will be used, said that the goal of the ARR, right, is not to develop something to replace doctors, but to create something superhuman, folks. Superhuman? Superhuman, they said. 25%, remember, 78, 25% error prone is now superhuman. You get this now, folks. You're putting it all together. Quote, so not to replace or accelerate something that a doctor can do, but to do something that a doctor can't do by monitoring the results, he added. Well, when you say it that way, right, folks? How nice. Now, don't underestimate. I think some of this AI is pretty cool. And to be able to predict this based on things we people can't see too well or we don't have sensors for, I'm all for. But when you read what I've read and when you hear half of what I say or a quarter of what I say about what's going on in the world and where we're going, that is an ominous story. And we think about Apple wrist health watches and all that. And we talked about those too. Same thing. Tracking and tracing and keeping track of you get on this to participate in society. You got to have your ID. No, it's not a centralized database. Oh, but all the providers are, but their records can be tapped. No, it's not centralized. No, it's like decentralized Bitcoin. It's all centralized, just in a different way. Anyway, so they give all these things. They send them out there. You're authorized. Only a certain amount of people have the monopoly to make money. And then they look at you. And then they start looking at these things that you believe are going to say your health. Certainly, the technocrat rules here. There's no inspiration. There's providence. There's no spiritual connection to anything on top of it all. There's the tests that are supplied that work, that they agree, that works for them to do what? Make it more efficient for them. Reduce their costs. Increase their profits. But when you start becoming, when they can see your heart, you got 10 years now, when they see your EKG kind of changing, they can anticipate some things. The AI might be able to figure some stuff out there. I'm not diminishing that point. I'm not challenging it. I'm saying, what are they using it for? And then you hear about the Obama scare and Trump scare, they denied them, but the committees of death, they're determining what care you're going to get, in particular with late stage. And then we hear Canuckistan going to euthanasia for people with COVID, things they can't, they're going to take some more effort to more cost to cure. Yeah, it's kind of like that, folks. But not to diminish the importance of accurate medical reports to track and trace potentially life-threatening matters. We have a medical report that reveals the boxer who won the Olympic gold in women's division has XY chromosomes and testicles. And it's just like I guessed, if it was a guess, an educated guess. So let's just read. I don't want to beat on this guy any more than he was beating on them women for sure. But there was a test, and it was all we know is it was definitive. And I said there was probably some genetic defect in his development that hid the problem, that could not be seen when the paperwork was made, that made him appear to be a female on paper, to validate that status. But we read now a new report on Imane Khalif, the boxer who won a gold medal in the women's division at the Paris Olympics, provides further evidence that the Algerian athlete has XY chromosomes and is a biological male. These folks want to talk about science. Here it is. and it was denied and has been denied to, promote agendas or make themselves look better amongst themselves, I guess, to our horror, because it's not true. It's not science. It's an insult to science. The science even of asking questions is destroyed here. But we get it back if we just kind of get to the fact of it and understand and fix reality to what it says and what we're given, notwithstanding we only have a few senses of our reality here. According to the Redux, the French journalist Jafar Ait Iodia obtained in October a copy of a physical examination that was conducted on Khalif to verify the presence of a disorder of a sexual development called 5-alpha reductase deficiency that is only found in biological males. According to Iodia, the clinical report revealed that Khalif underwent an MRA where it was determined that the boxer did not have a uterus, but instead had internal testicles. The chromosomal test reportedly confirmed that Khalif has an XY karyotype, and a hormone test revealed Khalif's hormone level to be typical of males. Khalif's reported sexual development deficiency causes babies to be incorrectly assigned female due to the presence of deformed genitalia. According to Redux, the disorder typically becomes apparent by puberty. Now, given respect to his beliefs, it had been reported that he was identified as a female birth and brought up a girl. We can see this could be an honest belief that he thought he was a woman. Now, I can't begrudge him that at all, but he's not a woman in fact. If anybody looking at him that I knew could not see but a man in that body and those motions, as I told you. And it's reported in a prior episode, as I did, that the definitive chromosome test indicated he was a male. He was definitively male by that scientific test, at least the best science we have at the time. And this is a very serious subject. I'm not trying to diminish this problem. But it was pretty clear. Many, many indicators were telling there was a better reality than the one that was being professed, even the one he believed. So here we go back to beliefs and feelings and all this other stuff that's also wanting to be promoted by, I don't know what to call them. I don't like to call them left or, you know, whatever, cancel culture even. These are just people, I think, that don't have an awareness of the world and really are maybe abused or something or hiding from themselves. I don't know what it is, but they don't want to sit in reality. There's a responsibility to reality, even if you're making a mistake. And I've always found if you can figure it out quick, try to solve it, admit to it, and move past, you know, move it, fix it, move it past. But this one went all the way to global prominence now. But the reality stayed the same. Now, that definitive test should have been enough to flip the burden to him. As we know, we try to do like the court of public opinion, the court where you have to produce the evidence. When the definitive test, the truly scientific test, the only one we know that does that and does it seemingly 100% of the time, I don't know that there's many times that it failed, so that knowledge isn't in me at this point, but certainly not here. It didn't fail here. That once that test is implemented, then the burden would flip to him to show, to the contrary, the biological fact that even here AI got right. He should, if I remember, my response was went to G-Sheets, asked the question, and it came back with these pieces of information. Did I just use G-Sheets AI? No. I told you at the time what studies I did in biology, and some of my thoughts came back from actually from high school as well. How far back something flashed in my mind, which I hadn't remembered, I couldn't remember, but things triggered it, reminded me to test that. It was my knowledge or what I could go find. Sure enough, AI had it right, so I went with it. What the AI came up with something, I could secondarily prove it. I can prove it in my own experience, and I came to tell you that very same thing. AI got that one right. It wasn't error-prone on this one. So definitive is this thing as well. The burden should have flipped to him to show to the contrary. There are other tests that he might have been able to bring, like an MRI. He could have went in and did it himself, but he should not have been put, and the point of this, in the point of where the definitive statement said he was male, he should not have been put into a boxing ring with women, but unless he could refute that presumption against him, which one of the contenders was Italy's Angelina Carina, remember, training her whole life for this Olympic opportunity, saying, after being fighting in the ring for 46 seconds, I've never been hit so hard, feeling it was not safe to continue fighting, that she was in such pain from Kali's punches that she feared for her life if she had continued. Now, Kali's feelings, nothing more than feelings, that he was a woman should not have destroyed the fact that he is a man. And someone could have got very seriously hurt in this regard. And I guess that's the underlying problem I'm seeing with all of this. And I hope we can do a little bit better than virtue signal ourselves into, well, an unreality. I mean, this is really must be, it's got to be a psychological problem here. If you keep pushing this point too far, it's got to be a psychological issue. And people need to be helped in that regard, that way. And that might be coming. Cyber rodent, Russian lab wires rat brain to AI in a world's first. Russian NIRI Biotech Laboratory, together with scientists from Moscow State University, presented the first results of a unique experiment. For the first time in the world, scientists and developers have connected a rat's brain to artificial intelligence. The rat is able to answer any question using a keyboard, the lab said. What can I say about this? Serious information here, though, but wow. He uses a keyboard. I wonder if it's a standard keyboard. The NIRI Biotech Laboratory told Sputnik that the brain of the laboratory rat, Pythia, was connected to a neural interface device, works in tandem with AI. The electrodes on the neural interface allow specific areas of the rodent's brain to be stimulated so that it understands when to answer yes or no. The rat has already answered hundreds of scientific questions correctly. Scientists believe that in the foreseeable future, any human with an implantable neural interface will be able to do the same. You'll be able to say yes or no. The developers have serious ambitions for the future. They plan to create a custom product that will help connect the human brain with the knowledge of all humanity. Omniscience, folks. Do you get what's going on here with these technocrats? What is the knowledge of all humanity? Let me think about that a little bit. What are we tapping into? Now, the rat that you all is, you too can be a yes or no wonder, it seems to me. But have you seen lately what is deemed to be the knowledge of all humanity? And I wonder if AI would allow you to know the world beyond yes or no once you're connected. So let's move into the interesting thing that went on this week. A very interesting dynamic. I wasn't too much interested in it. The people are going to be in offices and controls beyond whatever I can say and do. Maybe I've added a little bit to people that spread the word. I don't know. I doubt it very much here. We get more people listening, but I don't know if we have that much reach. Everywhere I go, we get a limited reach. But anyway. Very interesting dynamic. I think truly an unprecedented election. We'll move there quickly. The rat brains out there now on part of the community, a part of the population are going crazy over this. I don't even understand. Maybe we should give them the AI so they can use the little keyboards and say yes or no instead of all the emotion that I'm seeing where Trump wins this election. He even got the popular vote. Truly an unprecedented comeback. If I can call it a comeback, I'm not so sure that it was a comeback, but wow, just the all the things he was up against. A Trump win is a victory for the non-brainwashed Americans. Trump's win is a victory for the non-brainwashed Americans. U.S. voters have proven they can still judge reality by what it is despite all the establishment's efforts. So understand what I've been leading up to in my prior tabs to get to here. And it is in us. And reality finds a way, I suppose. Now, we may sit because we're actually caring, empathetic people generally. I mean, I know some people will insult anybody, but I'm saying generally we don't stop others from doing what they think they need to do, as long as it doesn't interfere with us. But we've seen that being exploited against us to the point that the vast majority of people, and glad to see most of it, came to its senses to say enough is enough. This was the one way they could do it. So the U.S. voters have proven they can still judge reality by what it is. Blowout alert. I guess average Americans don't like being infantilized. At least Trump trusted them to be able to take a joke, unlike his opponents. With the exception of those in a handful of states, Americans united to send former United States President Donald Trump back to the White House and handed him carte blanche with the Republican control of the Senate And this story says likely the House, and I forgot to go look and see. I think the Republicans may have taken the House. And if so, this is a very big opportunity that I want we, the people, I want my listeners to pay attention to. And all these things I've been saying, we have, those of you that would want to or should, we all really should, move this thing forward, because we now know the Republicans, and when they have a majority, won't do what they need to do. We now know they need to. And this guy, Trump, has a so-called mandate, and I have serious reservations about saying he's got a mandate, and serious reservations that he's put himself on a messiah plane. These are very dangerous type of things that could come together. That's going to take a whole lot of people working to keep this thing contained and utilize the advantage that was gained, given that this is, in fact, the case. Again, I apologize. I forgot to go look to see if the House finally got it. The last thing I knew it, the House was taken by the Republicans. Why is this all important? Whatever law they want to put in, they can get it passed. And this is very important. Then it's going to be important to make sure the right laws are passed. And it's a very tangential reach that people have with it. Part of your connection is actually contacting these representatives. In fact, I'm finding on the X Twitter, a couple of posts by congressmen have come through, and I've been able to at least drop my suggestion in where I would have never had the opportunity to contact them. So utilize what you can, put down what you can, put the ideas in people, and maybe then later go foster and encourage those things with your study that you've done, and you bring to them, don't be wrong once, you bring to them the facts, the reality, what's needed, how it's working, how it would work. You have it all worked out. You pitch it, if you will. You give them the summary idea, nice, concise statement, and you try to gain their interest. That becomes a pool for the rest to go along. As I said, just as an example, there's a congressional breach not funding the BLM to accept a land patent. Two congresspeople I have now sent over, can you refund the BLM to now accept a land patent? And they're talking about, these are on posts that were talking about land rights and production. That's the law I'm into. So I took note of that, and I was able to send back a notice. Hopefully they'll look at it. Hopefully they'll see it. If nothing else, I made it. I can always say, you know, when I sent you that X Twitter and I suggested this, can I inform you a little bit more on that? Is that interesting? It should be. Can we do something with this? This is really an important issue. We have our ability to get in while this turmoil is hitting the system, and while there's an idea about straightening things back up, reducing the size of government, reducing the agency impositions. These new court cases coming through to show that was the way it was supposed to be. There's a lot backing us up today that didn't happen up until this year. And now there's an opportunity, a doorway, and the pathway opens directly to get these things done. And we'll be able to then be readily able to see when they'd start dragging their feet and call that out and maybe bring them to toe quicker, because we only have maybe 4 years now. This is a serious opening. We didn't even have it during Trump 1, which is a total fiasco in my mind. He admitted that he pulled everybody. I told you, he put the swamp creatures up around his ears, and then one got nicked, right? So he admitted that. He'd put the wrong people in place. Shows you how tough that job might be, or how the man that could, you're fired, makes mistakes too in a grand way. And that's what the other part of this problem I'm talking about. When you have the messiah complex, be careful. Not bad for the guy that the establishment tried to brand as a reincarnated Hitler. Did Hitler also have the giant Israeli flags at the Madison Square Garden rally, or hang out at the Jewish Wall of Israel, or with the Hebrew inscribed tablets in a yarmulke? That should have been a Democrat's first sign their branding attempt was off. Yet just like the fitting title of the upcoming Harris biography co-authored by Chelsea Clinton, she persisted. The bottom line is that while the Trump was trash-talking everyone from neocons like Liz Cheney and her Iraq war architect father, the illustrious Dick, both of whom came out in favor of Harris, he was saying that what average people fed up with war were actually thinking. America isn't divided, at least not as much as we've been led to believe. Normal, average, non-brainwashed people of all stripes, who can still judge reality by what they see and experience in their daily life, rather than what they were told to think by the establishment's Hollywood and corporate media minstrels and court jesters, have fully availed themselves of the opportunity to express themselves in the most democratic way possible. And their message is that Trump isn't the radical. The establishment is. Now it's the establishment's turn to spend the next 4 years figuring out what they can do to actually serve the average voter rather than spending all their time indulging themselves in the attempts to leverage Americans' diversity to divide it self-servingly. So we're up here about to see how non-establishment Trump actually is, because he failed the last time, that it provides us a bit of expectation for a much better things to come. He saw that. How that turns out in his new actions, we'll have to see. And otherwise here that, and I may be wrong about the technocratic Democrat immigrants won't grip us with their clammy tentacles and will actually help move us up and away from the inside edge of the stinking abyss. If these people aren't actually part of the plan of destruction, we do have this opportunity, and it's coming from many sectors. I do not agree with a lot, at least up until now, of what RFK Jr. does or says. I don't think there's an insight in some of the other people. I don't know how Elon Musk has got himself in, except that he put a lot of money at the very end to buy his way into where he's at, the techno swamp. All the other people around Trump is the techno swamp. That's where this thing's going. So I'm not, and part of me, like I said, I might be wrong about this, but I'll be glad to be wrong on this one. I hope that these people are just talking through what they've known. They see that in desperation, they moved in the last moment, they prevailed, and there's something inside them that's changed, that there's a spiritual change that actually happened, that they cannot be measured by their past. I'm not so sure, because I see the word still being used, and I see the actions happening that are kind of hesitations. However, this is an opportunity. As we see in this article written by someone else from a far-off land looking at us, we have the power. We aren't divided, as I've been saying. And then those that are, really, they're divided only because I think they're abused. Somehow they've been abused, even by the system, by education, physical abuse, environmental abuses, psychological abuses. And we see the reflection. It's a meme. It's a meme right now. But I'm not really happy to see it. This is that problem with the Covey swindle crazy people. Just walk away for a while. Just don't engage them. But at some point, we are a nation. For as much as I may talk against the government, yeah, there's real serious problems. The judiciary, oh yeah. We still are the people. If you look at North Carolina. If you look at what happened in Helene. Not the government. Look at the people. That's us. And we're everywhere. And we finally have a hand in this. Those people stood up. I think a lot of people that are voters and cheerleaders are misguided. That doesn't mean that that's not the system that runs, but that's running right now. And even so, in the organic establishment, there's an opportunity, whatever my beliefs are. But people are going to have to not hand it to a chosen Messiah leader. They're going to have to utilize the window that he created, that he was adept enough to open the window, the door he opened, because he understands. Remember, he's a performer. And he did a job. I got to hand it to this guy. And so here we are. He's opened the door. And I think he's conducive. I think he could be even more so receptive. It's very hard to find a receptive political creature. I've said we'd be able to find a couple working in counties, but there's still very few, even at the county level. It shows you how rare these folks are. I'm hoping the inspiration of the ear nick didn't go to what the deep state wants him to do. I'm hoping a lot of that was political rhetoric. I don't want to hold him to it. We'll see. One of the good things that already may have come out of this real quickly, and this is how fast the House of Cards collapses as well. Look at these evidences that happen. This really is a unique moment to watch. This thing with Trump being elected, it might be a sign of better things to come generally in the world for people everywhere. And I've seen some posts come out that people everywhere, in lots of places they're excited that there's an example that we don't have to be the oppressed people of those do-gooders in the world. That they think they can do things better than we can do for ourselves. And we tend to let them. There's a lot of people that are concerned about this, that see it, but are feeling helpless, that are no longer feeling as helpless. So this little thing here is very important in freeing ourselves everywhere from the oppression of the stupid. German government has collapsed. Chancellor Olaf Scholz has announced a vote of confidence, paving way for potential snap elections. Now, I know most people in the United States say, oh, that's not here. Well, you're not what are you talking about over there? I'm telling you, these are reflections. These are reactions that are going on from the simple results of an election. They're global in their reach, and they're immediate when you're up against a house of cards. Again, an unreality, something built on a house of cards. The Greens expressed regret over this development of Trump's election, but stated that they wish to remain part of the minority government, emphasizing the need for the EU and the Germany in particular to demonstrate its capacity for action following Donald Trump's election as the U.S. president. The right-wing Alternative for Germany opposition party welcomed the coalition's collapse as a long-overdue liberation for Germany. If I got that story right in my memory, just recently, the Alternative for Germany party was deemed to be somewhat of a terrorist organization as well in Germany, how oppressed these people are. And so this was an immediate response to Trump's election. We'll go through, there's a lot to analyze. It's amazing what the dynamic that's set up about this and what this is doing. And again, what this guy represents, as I was talking, you know, the archetype is also very powerful. And I had a comment about the archetype and thinking it was something else. I can't remember now what the thing was, but these philosophical ideas are very difficult to go through. There's especially the one that was mentioned, it's just so broad spectrum. I mean, what are you talking about? What particular thing? And so my referencing to these that story about the myths and the archetypes was really just to expose that's what what we're dealing with is a symbol, is something that we can use for ourselves to step up, like I think people are being inspired to do. I'm really excited in a way to watch people be excited now. And how fast this thing, how tenuous that stuff is happening in Europe. It knocked out Germany's government at this point. That's pretty impressive. And with Trump's victory, truly, I believe this is an unprecedented condition for this president-elect here. Here we now watch other dominoes start to fall because of the nature of the establishment and what's going on, how this all starts to work out. And I don't know how he got himself here, but he does. He's just a special thing. I would have never, I consider him an actor, all right? So not that he hasn't done stuff, not that he isn't do things, and he's not intelligent. But some of these things are, you know, it's like an insider knowledge type thing that he's very good at exploiting. But here, look at the things he couldn't adjust. That have happened to him. Another reason why it's so unprecedented what he's done. I don't want to talk him up too much. This is just the factual things that I've never seen in my life. I don't know about any of you all, but I've not seen this kind of a situation where someone comes through and literally is that symbolic triumphant thing, even though I don't necessarily think it's a hero's condition in the archetypal sense. And I've also made the comment that he's not pure in any sense. And so it may be, if you will, the evil, the lesser evil being used for good because of those very qualities. But the judge pauses Trump case after election win. Prosecutor Jack Smith's election interference probe against the incoming president is likely dead in the water. The federal judge on Wednesday in Washington, D.C. has canceled any remaining deadlines in the government's election interference case against President-elect Donald Trump. Quote, the government's 278 unopposed motion to vacate briefing schedule is hereby granted. All remaining deadlines in the pretrial schedule are vacated. By December 2, 2024, the government shall file a status report indicating its proposed course for this case going forward, the ruling read. And this is said to pave the way for the case to be dropped in light of Trump's election victory. In a court filing on Friday, Special Counsel Jack Smith requested that, quote, the court vacate the remaining deadlines in the pretrial schedule to afford the government time to assess its unprecedented circumstance of Trump's win and to determine the appropriate course going forward. Justice Department policy shields sitting presidents from prosecution, and Smith is expected to wind down his case in a separate federal case against Trump and be dismissed before the president-elect is inaugurated in January. Trump has maintained from the outset that the case is a pathetic attempt by the Biden administration to, quote, interfere with the 2024 presidential election, describing Smith as a crooked person. Trump said last week that he would fire the special counsel within 2 seconds of taking office. this guy's going to be fast in moving, as fast as he's saying he's going to do everything in about a minute. This is going to be a very fast-acting president if he goes and does this. He's also said he's going to separate these the OIG, I think, from the DOJ and any other office so that the agencies are no longer together to be able to commingle their efforts. He's also said, if I heard correctly, he's going to remove some of these agencies that remain out of Washington to put them far away so that they have a harder time commingling their efforts. And I think he was talking about moving it to Colorado, which I've said and it's understood to be the Western White House. And be very careful of that. However, this is what's going on now. Pretty very interesting things, whether or not they eventually do anything, but Trump has maintained that they have been a pathetic attempt, and interestingly, they're ended after the election, but for an interesting reason as well. They won't prosecute a sitting president. In addition to two federal cases, Trump was charged in New York with the misreporting hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels, and in Georgia with conspiring to overturn the results of a 2020 election in the state. He was found guilty on all counts in New York and in May, and Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg successfully elevated one misdemeanor offense into 34 felonies, one for each installment paid to Daniels. Trump is due to be sentenced in New York later this month. However, his lawyers have already argued that the charges should be overturned due to the Supreme Court ruling in July that stated that presidents are immune from prosecution over actions taken while they were in office, as some of the alleged crimes were in Trump's case. This was truly a do-or-die election for Trump, looking at all these things that were on him and what the ramifications might be if he were to win. Now he has. It just seems some people are just seemingly born under that lucky star, aren't they? I mean, just I don't know how else to describe this totality of what's going on around him. He had no way of knowing this lawfare would be coming, to be said that he had any hand or skill to be in it or plan to divert it and to avoid it. So this is really, again, the unprecedented condition. It's not like he could work this thing around. It come at him blindsided, and he still prevails. It's pretty remarkable what happens around this guy. You know, something the guy behind the woodshed, the poster child for build it and they won't come, has never, ever experienced, I don't think, ever in my life. I can't even get a dime donation to the network for a broadcast here, as we are seeing an increase. Sound Mind just working his little fingers to the bone, working out a syndication system. It's not getting us up into the 75,000 and 100,000 view clicks range. He's trying to just get us everywhere. And again, if this seems to be the method by which how we were going to get it, because it's not just happening at one spot. It's certainly not happening on my BitChute account. And yet now I'm being told that they're sticking around for that. All your listeners are sticking around for about a half an hour. Thank you very much. I'd like to have you around for 2 hours while I'm talking. But I don't know what to speak to. You don't tell me what to speak to. But so it's half an hour. That's quite a long time. It used to be a lot less. So thank you for that. But from all over the place. You're coming in from all over. So it's very cool to hear. But I can't get a dime of broadcast to help my sound make it better. And so I don't have any lucky star that I live under. Nothing I make kind of seems to kind of work. I can't even catch a break, even owning a mining claim. At a time of historic gold prices, this is so frustrating to watch this thing. And because of a surprise that I didn't see coming, now an ex-friend of mine who had become an objectively criminal abuser as well. That's just the law. What's going on around me? And I can't escape it at this point. So, again, lucky star, no. I've got a mine. I got gold in the ground, and it's the most valuable it's ever been in history, and I can't get at it. And anybody who understands this, looks at this, can't understand what's going on with this guy. And it's a totally unexpected and uncharacteristic changes here as well. And I know, I don't think COVID swindle jab has anything to do with it. But obstructing a gold star gold production is just kind of my situation in life, because I don't know. I can't believe the lack of fortune. It's quite amazing, actually. But I'm told by a friend it's because Satan hates me with what I do here and other things. So I suppose I should take that as a consolation, though. That doesn't really fully answer it either. And then to watch this cat, Trump, avoiding lawfare against him, like another Teflon Donald in name now. This is really, truly unprecedented times. Talk about nine lives on each lucky star he is born under. A star is born, I suppose, in this unscriptable kabuki theater. Or is it unscripted? And waiting now for scene two, any pardons he now bestows upon himself. Truly interesting to watch. Again, I'm interested just in the establishment of, you know, every people's, it seems, has some sort of government, whether that's the family government all the way up to these complex government systems, just to watch how they operate, how people observe, and then to see this come through, in a way, against all odds. And I'm waiting to see how it wasn't against all odds, I guess, as well. But I should say this is BTWRLM 602. U.S. should quiet down about democracy now, Moscow says. And I think we need to kind of look a little bit about this because we need to really self-reflect a little bit. And I'm not sure what the answers are, so don't let me think that we're coming up with some real answer, because it's going to be we the people literally are going to have to be unified, stay unified. We're not diverse, as they also see from across the pond. We actually aren't diverse. We just have a lot of people that are disgruntled and don't quite have their act together, that we have to keep our act together and keep those that we believe represent us to keep them representing us. But Moscow says the election campaign was a big, ugly quarrel symptomatic of a deep-rooted problems, says the foreign ministry spokesman Maria Zakharova. The U.S. political system has seriously deteriorated, as evidenced by the highly contentious nature of the presidential election, Zakharova said on Wednesday. The campaign was marked by a total replacement of normal debate on policy proposals with incendiary rhetoric, she claimed. And let's just take some of the truth of this into heart and understand where we might be failing and what we might demand that this we return to. Although, I'm going to do some analysis here relative to the criticism, because I think it's something that, not partly maybe my ignorance, not fully understanding it, but we have a unique system, as it were, regardless of what, and the distinction between people in it going within that, needs to be accounted for different than the system itself, and then the analysis is it really that bad, or does it need to be adjusted as we move this thing to try and stop this sort of nonsense all these years coming to get us to here. Now, hopefully we're going to prevail. We will rise above, if you will. But look at what it took, all the harm and hurt and death and destruction through these nonsenses that we can see. Clearly people recognize it. Finally have to say enough is enough. That was supposed to be avoided. As I said, we didn't go to Second Amendment, but even this was supposed to be avoided, and it wasn't. Everyone's saying it's a victory. No, the people may have been able to salvage something here, but it wasn't a victory because we got into it. We got into this point. Quote, this isn't just an unending quarrel, a squabble. One continuous process of inflaming passions in people which has been lasting in the United States for many years, she said. The U.S. electoral system itself is archaic. And new technologies are being used to gloss over the gaping wounds of the American democracy rather than to reform and improve things, Zakharova added. Now, I want to focus on that archaic thing because we're going to return to that. Most countries in the world are working to make their political systems better, yet the U.S. has the gall to lecture them, she said. Quote, the United States, with all of its political commentators, civilian activists, specialists, and democracy, should quiet down for a few years to come and refrain from judging the quality of democracy in other nations until they solve their own acute problems, Zakharova stated. The root issue in the American elite is the American elites, which Zakharova believes have lost their moral compass. The country is ruled by clans that have no other guiding philosophy except money. For money, regardless of their quality, smell, and color, they are ready for anything, she claimed. Quote, those clans have taken over the levers of power in the United States and sidelined the partisan superstructure, she said. Well, maybe not so much now. However, I'm listening to the criticism from afar, watching it, and understand who they are, and you know how much credit I've given Russia, but I want to kind of look closely for this because I think this is an important identification of criticisms that could be held valid. But at one point, she just said it. I just read it. This is a propaganda piece. And so here, if you've ever listened to what I try to show you, you can see both sides developing itself in these notices, these newstices, the news telling us what's going on. And her continued criticism here a little bit more. They do not let people discuss facts, have replaced debates with quasi-scientific an agenda, and have invented a new ethical system. Now, I want you to consider that what she's talking about, I'll just tell you, it is the cancel culture, sustainable development. It is what they try to bring on with the SCGs. And then I want you to remember what I've told you about what Russia's putting in, what they've just promoted with China, Xi Jinping. So read through the words and see what they're talking about. Reframe it in a better set of words. I hope you've already heard what she's already pointing to and criticizing us for not being. And it's the very thing I'm absolutely against doing when you hear me behind the woodshed talking what this nation of America needs to go to. What Trump actually did start to stomp out, to his credit, as well, being able to do so, like the stomping on the Paris Accord, which was removed by the next administration. Well, I'm telling you, we got to be careful on how we move forward. But here's what I'll call a propaganda by extension here of an interview from the documentary, I think they call it, called The Bullet. It's in a video, which y'all should see, putting your thinking caps on, observe and question everything you're watching, but identify the truths inside it as well. And it's a discussion on the assassination condition over there in Pennsylvania. Restating in this interview the conclusion in part about money and clans, and consider as well that whether international or not, this is used to cover Russia's own deception when pointing out the inadequacies of the American system, but these are a distraction as well. Understand what I'm saying relative to what I just told you. She brings up this list of quasi-scientific agenda, that's climate change, no science behind it all. The replace debates, that's consensus. There's actually no debate possible. Cancel culture steps up, an embedded ethical system, the direct democracy, the cancel culture basis, the ethical system of the UN actually is what's being implemented. That's what's playing a part here. Okay, so understand what she's actually saying about this. And then looking at that bullet, and they repeat the very same talking points about money and clans that's taken over the United States. And so look at the integrated media now coming with this presentation of the video called Bullet. Relative to what she says now, but later, when here Russia's own deception in pointing out that the American system is a distraction for how does any control push sustainable development globally without having, quote, replaced debates with quasi-scientific agenda and having invented a new ethical system, as Maria Zakharova states. It's just a re-implementation in a different way. As we want to go to the point I made about, remember, as she says, archaic. Our system is archaic. Well, it starts with our Constitution, which required a certain type of process. And I don't want to go through the analysis. I don't have the time here. Some of it I don't fully appreciate, and I'd have to go do a lot more deeper research, which I have no capacity to do, no ability to do right now at all either. So, in a way, I'm not doing this thing justice at all, but it's something that we need to relook at, possibly. And a lot of people I admire for their opinions and their insights, but don't quite follow this either. And I think maybe it's just going back to the original documents, and I may have found some links, at least get them to us, to start relooking at this. But she mentions an antiquated system. In particular, we use that electoral process. So before we entertain the thought of the antiquated system as a criticism and a needing to be updated sustainably, it's shown here now. We need to study the process to understand why it was instituted. But besides the suggestion coming from the people in Zakharov, Russia, that have existed for over 1,000 years, largely ruled by czars, saying the electoral college process used by this country is antiquated, is at least an interesting suggestion to my mind in saying so. But I'm not sure what I think of that, or actually what I think as to how we find it today. So before agreeing to a foreign power to decide the antiquity of the electoral college process, the attack upon which is typically to cause the population further distrust and failure of confidence in our system, and therefore division. If you go back to what I'm saying, this is a propaganda piece as well. And it correlated a public speaker, government speaker, with a private video documentary. Together, they came together in within 2 days to fortify and back each other up on the same talking points. So before we start listening to that, we want to make sure that we don't say, oh, yeah, right. Let's go look at the criticism. While we are in the throes of unaccountable election frauds and cognitive warfare, and let's understand the purpose of that by studying it before we come to conclusions and agree. They can do 90% agreement, and if she's wrong on that one point, for us, that's the critical point that she's wrong on that we then accept. We can't just accept this stuff. This is really a unique process. Even if it's, for us, it does look archaic, but I'm not so sure yet. There's some reasons, and we've been saved a couple times by it, and it has some history to it. And so for studying purposes, though I won't do the study, as I said, this will take way too much time to do that here. I found a U.S. government explanation about the Electoral College on the Internet. It is from U.S.gov. You can roll your eyes or whatever. We'll just take it from the horse's mouth, if you will. What the occupier says, whether or not it is, we'll find out. They don't talk too much. And the occupier doesn't talk irregular about the Constitution. That's what's interesting. It's written. They really can't go too far. So in this, we can look at their response, their explanation, the history of it, what happened, some of the things that went around it, and get a better sense on what this archaic system was. And I have two links that we can go through, but we'll read maybe, well, I can't see again, it's so much to read through, but the more important part of the links are links to more specific links inside. When you see these links, get them from the blogcaster, maybe from the link tree that sound provides in your comments of your videos that you're sitting on your various platforms now. All 100,000 of you that'll come in about 10 days. Thank you very much again. Consider donating, even a coffee to Sound. Let him, he's come up with a lot of time and money to keep going. And I must say quickly, we are having a problem with the website. Haven't figured it out. We have the host company looking at it at snail pace at this point. So we're kind of frustrated, but we're working on that. Like I said, this whole system is supposed to be changed, hopefully to much more reliable in the near future. But thank you for listening and donating if you can. But we need to do the research and find the links. Get to the links of the more specific documents that include the Founding Fathers' rationale in the form of the Federalist Papers that you read. I think there's three of them. And the writings of Thomas Jefferson at the archive.gov link, the FACT, the FAQ, referring to other libraries and sources as well. So get, again, just reading material. Get up to speed on what this is. Be fortified in what your government's about and understand the basis for it, and maybe there is something we need to change. If not, we don't want to touch it. Like I said, we don't want to start getting our fingers in too many places. I've seen so many people think they know what's going on. And when you really think about what they're doing, what they're saying, it's either covered, or they're not making it better, or they're actually going to cause a trouble with it because they create the question and the assertion. And it's these dynamics that I've learned to read for that are a bit scary in a way, because we just don't know we don't know what we're doing so much. And again, there's people that know us better ourselves, and they can get us to do things that we should not be doing before we're ready, if ever. So once we do that, then we're up to speed. Maybe we can analyze what corruptions there might be, if any, that have been incorporated to see, like since then, the interpretations of things, to see whether we enjoy the original intent and purpose, or if we have been deceived to accept the subversion and then decide if that really serves we the people. The one question I have right from the first part we can read, explaining that in U.S. elections, candidates are elected directly by the popular vote, but the president and vice president are not elected directly by citizens. Instead, they are chosen through the Electoral College process, and that the process of using electors comes from the Constitution. It was a compromise between a popular vote by citizens and a vote in Congress. And this triggered a whole other thought. I've even talked about it, what happened in the establishment of the voting of senators. That's been altered. This is the kind of corruptions I'm wondering if not been put into the system now that we have to relook at. So the Electoral College process is not a place, but a process that's a compromise which tries to balance the direct participation of people, direct democracy. It didn't want to do that, with their representation in the general government. Now my question then is, how is the compromise not subverted, save an elector's independence, in the Electoral College process, an elector's independence? And despite a coercive threat of penalty in disobeying the direct popular vote, which in practice historically is still not enough, it seems, to affect the election, how can the state lawfully command the elector's will to align with the minority of those participating in the popular vote? Why a minority? Because not everyone votes, and that number of disaffected people must be added to the minority of voters that voted in the minority for another candidate. So we're not into the democracy at all now. We're in this minority, shareholders, if you will, that actually run the chicken coop, the mental institution. So how has the Electoral College system not been reduced to a direct democracy of a minority that the founders, it seems like, made every effort to avoid? And why does this seeming adulteration sound no different than the corruption to the original intent for selecting those state senator representations through allowing people to vote directly for the state senator to the federal general government instead of the state Senate body originally intended, the members of which are voted in to office by direct vote, those members of which are by direct vote of the people, the state for state representation in the state Senate, but the general government's federal senator is supposed to be, or originally was, to be voted by the members of the Senate. I've seen some evidence of why this was important to do it this way, and it goes on. It's a fractal. The federal looks and reflects the state. It has the same purpose, and we've seen a failure now because it isn't that way. So then, the people vote directly for the state House of Representatives. That was supposed to be the original plan. The senators, we found, were supposed to be voted by the county, the whole governments of the people. And that balanced the local interests between the governmental interest local, the county, and the people, as represented by the state. So we see a foreign country criticizing our system, it's likely that they are exploiting an ignorance of us, or we the people, once removed from the original intention of that system, allowing the exploitation of the people whom never stopped the corruption that we were duty-bound to do, though having that duty and obligation as written into the organic establishment, which I find to be an Achilles heel for we the people. They've been exploiting that. Then they converted that even further part, made a further hardship for us. So, in other words, it seems that corruption for the people to vote for federal senators, and I've seen that corruption play out against the county government at the state level of a similar governmental establishment. The states were represented in the general government, so the counties represented by the Senate at the state government were to vote for them in there when they then were selected by that body to go to the federal. But that was all ruled unlawful. But we can find since then, as I said, there's been harm done because there's a different obligation and duty between a total government like a county looking for everybody's interests, or each one, the democracy, each one of the people, and their own separate interests that are supposed to be treated different. And I try to interpret what the organic establishment was really about that appears to have been so adulterated, corrupted, and the courts did that. And they really hasn't made sense to me when I read those court cases about them doing that, how that actually worked. And so I'm looking at maybe this was an overthrow of it as well, another style. To make they're moving toward this direct democracy, even if it doesn't look like it. Even if you're not voting through the UN, you're doing it through how this thing is set up. So looking back at the RT-made video called Bullet about the attempted assassination of Trump, to have Zakharova use the same dialogue in the Bullet video soon after its release is reinforcement through any truth therein cannot be disregarded, and it is its own misinformation in a way, and thus must be noted. That the subsequent use of Zakharova, even where she says the U.S. political system has seriously deteriorated, as evidenced by the highly contentious nature of the presidential election, to promote an attack on the system generally as antiquated is suspect here. They want to keep people, any nation in an attack will try to keep people in distrust. That's the core. That's why you see people rallying up with patriotism. It's just a natural thing. But you got to be cognizant of it as the people yourselves, that you're not being huddled to, you know, the huddled masses squashed together and used and exploited yourselves. So that she attacks this system as antiquated, something existing after their whole system as a people, is really suspect of what the intention was there. But the deterioration of the political system says more about the fraud and undue influence and that such thing. It is not the electoral college process at all. It's not the same thing. So to move the deterioration of the political system as that is actually a fraud and undue influence doesn't say anything about the electoral process and whether antiquated is relevant. It says that there's fraud in the system, and that should have been pulled out. What from what? The courts. The courts were duty bound to do the equity and the trust of the people to keep the people safe, as I understand the original organic establishment was. And antiquated as that might be, that's the way it's supposed to work. What we're watching is that it's not, these are not trustees of the people. They claim to be, but they're not. The judiciary. As I, again, referencing that Virginia Constitution is so clear. If I had no other thing, document to point out of how it was supposed to be made up, I'd go to the Virginia Constitution and I'd show you the, you know, first five articles. And you'd see, well, it says that the judges are trustees. Well, of what? That trust that was established in the Constitution. To where? The sovereigns, the people, not the government. And so there's a big fiction going on as well. But so to identify the actual problem, it's not the political system that was set up yet. We haven't found any quite yet. It's the fraud and undue influence and things like that inside that system. So it requires to identify the object of fulfilling democracy and not the constitutional republic seems to be the problematic thing that promotes democracy as a superior when we listen to these criticisms. When they're saying that the United States, with all of its political commentators, civilian activists, and specialists in democracy should quiet down. They're exalting democracy, but we're in a constitutional republic. It may be said that the people vote on it, but if you look at the college, and you look at the coercion by the states and the courts agreeing that you have to have the states, that the elector has to choose what the people vote. What was the compromise there? That's a direct vote of the people. In minority now. It's even less and it's even worse. Doesn't seem to me to be a criticism of the archaic system. That's a criticism of how it's failed us, how it's been corrupted. Because what it's being turning us into is the inability to maintain property rights that is then also subject to mob rule. And again, you will have property and like it. Remember that. That the root issue is the American elites, which Zakharova believes has lost their moral compass, and that the country is ruled by clans that have no other guiding philosophy except money, speaks to the people in the political process, not the political process itself, correct? So she can be right here, but off point. But Russia promotes direct democracy through its utilization of sustainable development, which makes no room for private property. And you'll have no property in anything and like it. Remember? What I've told you, when you have no property, at least in America under the Constitution, there's no need to give you due process, because due process is to protect the property. And you have a pertinent rights to that. And to my knowledge, the Russian government has never been perceived as an impartial guarantor or to protect the protector of private property and the concept of reciprocal obligation between ruler and citizen also does not exist. Talk about an archaic system. But they turn it around on us in their formal statement to the public now in the Globe that, again, we have that, and I've shown you this protector of private property trust obligation in the patent. I've explained all that to you. It's not in Russia. These are the things I've told you are unique to the American system. And so where I would normally appreciate what Zakharova was said, not on this one, I'm not so sure at all. And I can also see it as a weak spot plunge of a dagger into our system, but I'm taking it more to, we better understand our system better. They're wanting to attack it because what they're bringing on and what the cancer still in this country is, just because Trump got in office doesn't mean anything that way. The cancer's still festering. In the future, it comes out. Remember, it all is going to go. There's a direction. We can stop it as a people. We were told, even by the economic hitman, it's in us to do this. And as I've been saying, here as well. So it's pretty universal, this idea that the people, the occupied, have to throw it off. But you don't want to go for the frying pan to the fire. So she's criticizing something that Russia doesn't even do relative to what our archaic system actually does, or at least should do. We may not have enjoyed our patent rights because we haven't been a people that assert them over and over and over, as I've explained over and over and over how easy it is to do. But she herself said, asserting that the Electoral College process is antiquated without a more complete stated proof, it seems Russia itself should refrain from judging the quality of the Constitutional Republic of the United States and its Electoral College process that keeps the Republic relative to the offices of President and Vice President, the signature of the office of which is on every general government land patent disposing private property use and enjoyment of this soil forever. This is unique in the whole world, our archaic system, that this Electoral College process at this point still protects. And though we may have a criticism and look at what it needs to be, if it needs some tweaking. If not, there hasn't been much that it's gotten in the way of, actually. My concerns about the compromise being destroyed relative to direct democracy, direct vote by the people of the elector, aside. We the people, that we have in this country, that we have serious problems is of little doubt. I don't think there's a question about that. But wholesale condemnation of the entire system should nevertheless not be done in ignorance. Neither should any modification or abolishment that we have a right to do. Remember, it's in the Constitution too. And if it ever happens that Reconstruction is reoccurring, let's say in the general government or even your local government, we the people better show up to confine that government. Or as history proves out, government is more than willing to confine you irreparably. With that Republican Party sweeping here the Congress and the Senate and the House and the presidency, there is an opportunity now for both to happen. So don't leave the opportunity to the uniparty Zio-loving Republicans. We the people may not have such an opportunity to correct the course of the ship of state legislatively for a very long time into the future, if ever again, given that Trump is sincere. Remember, Trump can only last so long, and he can only do things administratively. The legislature is what makes permanence, to the extent that it can happen where votes can change laws or new laws can be amended into changing. But you understand the Constitution has not been altered too much since it got started, and that's the kind of laws you want, where we're trying to correct something. And if it seems, as the video bullet is correct, that only clans and money drive this nation, driving this nation into the stinking abyss after being attacked by the technokraken, will it be because the people do nothing more than move this deck chairs waiting for their well-meaning but uninformed captain to avoid the looming disaster while traveling at warp speed, as he did the first time he gained control of the helm? So pumping up a Messiah's mandate, as I'm hearing going on being promoted is not going to help matters. If he turns into the chosen tyrannical dictator with all the immunity the courts just extended to the office of president. So consider well what we're watching and what we might be watching and the literal double-edged sword that Trump represents, the symbol. Who's wielding that? Another chosen one who seems more and more to be able to be moving them deck chairs like crazy. Let's hope the ear-nicked Iran-done-it programming is only temporary and Trump notices more than the chosen chairs. Crisis in Tel Aviv, Israel is on the brink as reports indicate the possible military coup against Netanyahu following Gallant's dismissal. The situation is spiraling out of control. As I was telling you, the internal strife has been coming. I've been saying this for many episodes. Watching what's going on, watching the resistance actually start to tear that place apart. As I pointed out in those earlier episodes, Israel's in real trouble, and Netanyahu will do about anything to save his own skin. Hopefully this internal self-destruction is the karma earned from the morally indefensible claim of self-defense instead of the peaceful assimilation as originally envisioned in Palestine for the Jewish people, so-called. As we continue to read things going on and shaking up very terribly over there, even though there's support for it, and which is astonishing to me. Again, be careful of the chosen, the Messiah factor here relative to Trump. Ben-Gvir endorses Trump, says he'll give Israel the backing to act against Iran. So Occam may have been right here relative to the assassination attempt. As I told you, it didn't matter whether Trump lived or died. If he died, they're going to have someone else that would be the president. That would be conducive. He would win. If he lived, they were going to program him to accept that Iran was after him and going to do it. And he'd already had his hand at one of that situation with killing off that general Soleimani for no reason other than, well, it was Iran. Israel Jewish supremacist National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir endorsed Donald Trump for president on Wednesday because he believes that he will give Israel the backing to act against Iran. America first, though, right? That's what we heard, right? Ben-Gvir is one of the most extreme members of the Israeli Knesset, and he's the favorite to replace Netanyahu among Netanyahu's supporters. Oh, the future business deal with Trump here, I guess we're hearing about. This is the same Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's national security minister, that said back in October that spitting on Christians is an old Jewish tradition. It's not a criminal case. America first? That's what Trump said, right? Right? And you've heard me say many times prior that there are no longer any rules or laws to rely on that will be recognized in the first instance. And this is in practice and by experience, and a lot of you that tried have noticed this. And I've explained even more recently, more experience that shows and proves that these judges that sit on the bench, if I didn't fully see it and appreciate it before, and didn't fully know what it was, do legislate from the bench. Well, they'll deny it. And you can simply find it when there's a law, but the legislature says this is a remedy, and you're denied that by four judges and five different ways to get at that remedy, and they deny it, they're all legislating from the bench to a purpose. And so we see the corruption. So I've said that the rules and the laws don't seem to work, and part of that was the fraud of the monetary thing that happened in 2008, all these built together. And I should clarify there are principles working, but only those principles that explain what were to be avoided for a lawful society of limited official power. The principles that are working here now are those that take advantage by the remaining principles in force when a society didn't use the principles providing the detriment that we didn't avoid. One of the principles working is that those taking advantage make up anything to further their advantage. And one of the reasons there is no rules or principles to rely on in the world is because it works on the fraud. And now in support of that same fiat system of the world, completely. Another is that you live in an occupied territory ruled by ruthless, self-serving psychopaths, such as those ruling through the rules-based order, of their own making. Now, again, this is not just my opinion. Just watch and look at what's going on and apply. If you think it's outlandish what I'm saying or sensational, go apply these words. You'll see these things going on. You'll see the lack of limitation. You'll see the lack of rule and order. You'll see the lack of remedy. You see the lack of accountability. And you know that because there's no accountability at all, whether within the occupied territory or extraterritorially. Or if this guy behind the woodshed is wrong about an occupied people, the non-existence by the principles of native or natural justice that I talk about, those aren't working either. They're denounced as well. And where there's no accountability, no remedy, there is no law working. It's just a known rule, general natural law. And this is now finally acknowledged by those believing they have a press pass that the genocidal psychopaths will respect, also not realizing that they are not of the chosen. They are, in fact, of the other, also to be exterminated unaccountably. Well, we read Arabic correspondent on what's happening in Lebanon. Sky News Arabia TV's correspondent Darren L. Hillway told Sputnik about the Israeli bombing that took place last night in the Lebanese town of Hasbaya, in which a guest house with journalists from local and foreign media outlets was hit. Quote, "There was no doubt here. It's absolutely clear that there's Israeli attacking journalists. There's no room for error. There's no reason to justify what happened today. All of our cars had stickers of press signs on them. There was a vehicle with live broadcast equipment in it. Three journalists of the Lebanese TV channels, Al Mayadeen and Al Manar, were reportedly killed as a result of this bombing." So my takeaway today is, don't wait until the ruthless psychopath destroys your life. Don't wait to take action before we have to hear that civilian casualties as a result of massive indiscriminate attacks on densely populated residential areas in Beirut or other Lebanese cities by the rogue Israeli armed forces, thinking you are shielded from harm because of your own privileged, though not chosen, status, such in this case, the press. Or what has been clearly discernible to some guy behind the woodshed long since before now. It's too late to respond when you're dead. There's some people that recognize no status, if they're the chosen, if they're Messiah. But no hard evidence, no evidence of any wired wrongdoing. And here's why the United States government, like the Nazi Sergeant Joe Schultz in Hogan's Heroes, sees nothing and knows nothing. Washington ignored 500 reports saying Israel killed Gazan civilians with U.S. weapons. The United States government has consistently provided Israel with the weapons and political cover to continue its genocide of Palestine and Gaza over the past year. The reports were submitted by the United States government agencies, international aid organizations, NGOs, media reports, and eyewitness accounts. They include, quote, photo documentation of U.S.-made bomb fragments at sites where scores of children were killed, close quote. Yet despite the State Department's internal civilian harm incident response guidance, which directs officials to complete an investigation and recommend action within 2 months of launching an inquiry, no single case has reached the action stage, the officials revealed, to expose to us the administration of something that has many steps, any step of which cannot be completed if the prior step is not done yet, and they can drag their feet. And then we get governments that say, we see nothing and hear nothing. Just like Sergeant Schultz in Hogan's Heroes. While we hear Ben Giver saying he's going to get his support for Israel. And they're pre-staging for Trump, or the bombs rushed by Biden on this. The U.S. deploys 6 B-52 bombers to the Middle East amid rising tensions. No war, just rising tensions. The U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, announced that a group of B-52 aircraft have arrived with the Middle East on Sunday, but the exact number of bombers was not disclosed. The magazine sources did not specify where the bombers transferred from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota would be stationed. However, they reported that a cargo plane from there recently landed in Qatar as the latest U.S. airbase the largest U.S. airbase in the region, Al-Udeid. Almost, you died when you spelled that letter different. At any rate, earlier, the Pentagon announced that the U.S. had likewise dispatched a destroyer, bombers, and fighter jets to the Middle East. These forces are set to begin arriving in the region over the coming months. And again, in the next 2 months, a lot of destruction can be done by the regime, our Biden regime at this point. So from comments as well, my question regarding the targetability of these things after the F-35 lock-on, how many B-52s did the NVA shoot down during America's Vietnam War? Iran will have some very good target practice. The point of this is to say it wasn't going to matter who won the presidency, either by ear-nick power of repeated suggestion or warmongering propensity. It is that the Israel wants to war with Iran because Israel is on the ropes. With the acceptance of the unit party, your sons and daughters and are being staged to go fight and die for the illegal belligerent occupier called the State of Israel. Actually, the Zionist Federation political movement of the 1800s posing as a state, not unlike the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the NAZA, the Nazi party, that later agrees to allow the Zionist political movement to deceive the Jewish people and move them to Palestine with the help of His Majesty and the United Kingdom. Now, your sons and daughters are going to fight and die to extend the enlarge the terrible corruption and to maintain the access to the oil Hitler found he needed so badly in his war. And despite the United States government imposing climate change on you and the green religion requiring you to stop using fossil fuels, stem bones, because you are a threat to Earth. That being an existential threat to the Persian people for their oil, their natural resources, and is apparently fully permissible because, well, Zionism. The same genocidal Zionism that paid for both parties to win to further Israel first. Understand that. Didn't matter who was going to win. We might be happy Trump. I mean, I have a breath of fresh air about Trump getting things straightened up. Let's hope so. But it wouldn't have mattered, as I said, Occam was saying to me relative to the first assassination attempt. And it's likely paid for by something like this. I'll add before reading that if your candidate won this time, you likely won't care about it anyway. All of a sudden now it's not political, he'll take care of it, right? He's the Messiah, he's going to get everything fixed. But that would be a very big mistake. U.S. elections purportedly controlled by intelligence agencies. Dr. Jerome Corsi, who points out that he describes as a certain algorithms within the State Board of Elections and Voter Registration Database. According to him, Andrew Paquette, a computer graphics artist of a real genius in terms of computer work, found patterns in the New York voter registration files maintained by the State Board of Elections. These are actual records for which voting occurs, and he found that they had been arranged mathematically so as to hide data. As he began to get into the system and figure out the patterns, he actually came up with the equations, the algorithms that are involved in assigning voter IDs to voters in New York, Dr. Corsi elaborates. This scheme, which he suggests is designed to allow its perpetrators to insert voters who do not exist, is so complicated mathematically that it has to be an intelligence operation, he suggests. It's designed to be hidden. It would be costly to put it in place, show it in place. It would require a clandestine group to get access to the State Board of Education computers so that they can embed these codes and make the database work the way that they want in the future, hiding data. And that's the key. We're looking now after the fact. Your candidate may have won, but he's going to have to be in place. He may or he may not be in a party that controls this, or the deep state, or the deep state direction. And the future elections are what we're talking about here. You shouldn't go to sleep on it. Why I'm even talking about this after the election. This has been an ongoing thing for decades and decades. I've told you my story about it. Machines before Windows was a counting system. But at any rate, to go back to here, what they think they're finding, you'd be looking for this kind of stuff, those of you that are into election fraud and want to stop it. And start maintaining some kind of maybe legislation to have checks and have people do checks to verify that these things are not in these and what to look for. And I think there's a finding that these algorithms are virtually in every state we're looking at, and they've been there since 2007. Dr. Corsi claims that the perpetrators of this scheme aim to rearrange voter data so that the voter's number isn't tied to their registration date. A mass of non-existent voters numbering in the hundreds of thousands, non-existing but officially registered nonetheless, allegedly exists in state registered databases. Now, at this point, their numbers may be not enough to overthrow what you saw happen in this last election, but they're working on it, is all I can say here, if this is true. Again, it all has to be checked out. Interesting study that was done to find this out. And now I'm seeing, well, this is a hack. Anybody can now look to do this, maybe, in the future, if it's not being done. What happens is the voter appears to be a real person. You've got a certifiable vote, even though the person doesn't exist, says Dr. Corsi. To influence elections, perpetrators allegedly use algorithms to identify and cast mail-in ballots for those ghost voters. Dr. Corsi claims that the mainstream media avoids reporting this because it is controlled by the CIA. The scheme here, the nefarious part of the scheme I'm describing, is that these criminals controlling the State Board of Election, I guess I said education before, election voter rolls clandestinely can put their non-existent voters into the data set and get away with it because these people have real legitimate numbers, he explains. These are non-existing people having real legitimate numbers issued by the State Board of Elections to vote. And so, therefore, when they vote these mail-in ballots, the scheme is largely in mail-in ballot scheme that vote that number, which is certifiable. And challenging a certifiable vote, Dr. Corsi points out, is very difficult in the U.S. because it essentially amounts to claiming that the certification was wrong, which is difficult to prove. As I told you, they don't even have you access, you don't get access to the machines either. Very difficult, impossible almost. The courts don't want to hear these cases because it's political. Our courts consider our elections political. They don't want to resolve in a political question, he adds. I'm asking questions about the future, Dr. Corsi says, and I'm saying, how many illegal votes are we going to get in this coming election? Why are these algorithms there? Who put them there? They've been there since 2007. We can tell from the computer records. Have they been used in the past elections? I don't know, but I'm questioning. CIA quality encryption involved in the alleged ghost voter schemes in the U.S., the algorithms allegedly employed in the scheme for conceals thousands of fake voters in the U.S. state voter registration databases are way too complex to be pulled by some kid with a computer in his father's garage, argues Dr. Corsi. This is a CIA quality encryption, he alleges. It's this kind of encryption you would do if you were running a military or you're putting an army in the field and you want to your army to communicate on the code that you do that you would do with the algorithms and cryptography so that the enemy can't read the codes. According to him, the people so snuck these reported fake voters into registration databases and know how to locate these voters that can thus procure mail-in ballots that can be certified because the numbers match even though the voter doesn't. About one-third of the voters in the United States cast their ballots early during the election, with most of them doing so by mail. Corsi also points out the circumstances of the sudden surge in popularity Kamala Harris experienced not long after she replaced Joe Biden, a Democratic Party candidate in 2024 under presidential elections. Suddenly you get stories about Kamala is surging. So the signs of these are, first of all, Kamala then has better numbers. So at the end, when they say Kamala surged, that justifies the voting scheme where at the end all the non-existent people are voted in order to change the real outcome of an election. And so more and more on that he talks about this. I think it's an important consideration. It's not the votes, folks, but he who counts the votes, as we've heard. I suspect given the judiciary believes fraud is a political matter, if this could be proven out, it would form a very solid basis to pass legislation outlawing mail-in ballots, dealing with the problems of access for the infirm or the elderly or the military could be happening in a different way, as they already do. They do the mail-in, but they limit it to the mail-in on those. And maybe that the legislation require a notice that the popular vote is merely a symbolic in representative republic, where electors elect the offices of president and vice president, that the vote of the elector cannot be challenged, even at the and despite the law directing the elector to use a popular consensus whereby the penalty is imposed. That seems to be a complete, having a penalty for that, it seems to be a complete invalidation of the compromise that the founders put in. We'd have to read more about that. There's no need for a vote of those offices by the general public, which would reduce the fraudulent expenditures to convince the public that they vote in democracy when they don't. Otherwise, we are in a direct democracy already. So there's a little bit more to discuss on a lot of these things. And I think we need to enter into those discussions while we have the chance. It's now on the minds of people. More than half of the population said enough is enough. That's quite a momentum. There's a gentleman in the office right now that sounds willing. I've seen them come and go periodically. I've worked with a couple of them locally. Very interesting to work with and watch stuff happen and go in the right direction. Like I said, the fire policy. Changed that over in overnight almost. It took weeks, months to get the hearings out of the way, but then the fix was in, and it really fixed stuff up, cleaned everything up. So I hope I've said something today, invigorate some of the discussion, start to think about these things, really roll your sleeves up and get involved with some, decide to get involved right now. I think there's a big window. I know it sounds like politics and it's all dry, but it sounds like we don't have a choice in a way. They're going to bring back stuff that you see how close they got on some of these things. This is BTWRLM 602, and I'll be with you next week. Tech tips or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listen to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Call by